Public Radio KMXT is supported by a grant from North Pacific Fuel, serving and continuing the tradition of excellent service to the community at three locations: Marine Dock at 715 Shelikoff Street, Gas & Go at the Y, and Gas & Go at Mill Bay.
It's nearly 12 o'clock and time for the KMXT Midday Report. Thanks for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. It's your public radio station. We're broadcasting from up here on Signal Hill, where it's 54 degrees under overcast skies. We are looking for increasing northwest winds to blow these clouds away by tonight. Even by this afternoon, they're talking about partly sunny skies this afternoon, a high of 57. Those winds blowing up into the 30s today and tonight, and gusting as high as 40 tonight from the northwest. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high near 49, northwest winds to 30, gusting as high as 35 tomorrow. Coming up on the Midday Report, recent research links pollock fishing with a decline in fur seals in the Bering Sea. A big winter storm in the interior. And Norway's ambassador to the United States is visiting Alaska. Those stories and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. Wall Street's capping a day of volatility that at one point saw the Dow drop more than 900 points. Multiple factors play into the sharp sell-off, especially investors' worries about debt payments in China and at home. Here's NPR's Scott Horsley.
The immediate spark for the stock drop was a Chinese development company, Evergrande, which is carrying hundreds of billions of dollars in debt. A couple of big interest payments are about to come due, and there are fears Evergrande won't be able to pay, potentially sending shockwaves throughout the financial system. That's just a mild tremor, though, compared to what could happen if the U.S. government were to default. To avoid that, lawmakers need to authorize additional borrowing power before next month. Most Republicans in Congress say they won't vote for that, and Democrats insist they won't do it on their own. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen penned an op-ed for the Wall Street Journal warning of dire consequences if Congress fails to act in a timely fashion. Scott Horsley, NPR News, Washington.
We see stocks regain some ground today. The Dow closes down 614 points, 1.7% at 33,970. The Nasdaq was down 330 points, 2.1%. S&P closed down 1.6%. Against the backdrop of the sell-off, congressional Democrats are promoting a measure that funds the government through December. It would also suspend the debt limit through the end of next year after the 2022 midterm elections. In a familiar bit of political posturing, Republicans are threatening to vote against an increase in the debt ceiling. The White House has announced fully vaccinated international travelers will be able to visit the U.S. beginning in November. That's a significant policy shift after months of coronavirus-related travel bans. Here's NPR's Tamara Keith.
Fully vaccinated international travelers will have to present proof of vaccination and get tested before flying. White House COVID-19 coordinator Jeff Zients says they'll also need to provide a phone number and email for contact tracing.
This new system allows us to implement strict protocols to prevent the spread of COVID from passengers flying internationally into the United States by requiring that adult foreign nationals traveling to the United States be fully vaccinated. It's based on public health.
For Americans returning to the U.S., vaccination won't be required, but they will have to test before and after their flights. The new protocols will replace bans on travelers from China, India, Europe, and more. Tamara Keith, NPR News, The White House.
The U.S. Supreme Court set the date for hearing a case that tests whether all state laws that ban pre-viability abortions are unconstitutional. On December 1st, a conservative-leaning court will hear arguments in Mississippi's bid to maintain its ban on most abortions after the 15th week of pregnancy. The high court recently allowed Texas for the time being to move forward with its law banning abortions after a fetal heartbeat is detected. That usually happens after just 6 weeks before many women even know that they're pregnant. You're listening to NPR News.
NPR News is presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
the number of northern fur seals in the Bering Sea has dropped significantly by about 70% since the 1970s, and researchers haven't been sure exactly why. But research published this month suggests the commercial Alaska pollock industry could be to blame. KUCB's Theo Greenlee has this report.
Researchers have suspected that the Alaska pollock fishery was responsible for the decline of northern fur seals in the Bering Sea, but it's been difficult to prove. That could be because most research has focused on the overall abundance of pollock, which is a lot. For this study, though, researchers tried looking at the pollock catch, that is, the amount of fish being pulled out of the water. And when they tried that,
I was just astonished at how well it worked.
Jeffrey Short is the lead author of a study published in the Journal of Marine Science and Engineering.
Just that single number pollock catch can explain nearly all of the population trajectory since about the mid-1970s.
Short says his team found evidence that suggests the pollock industry may have made it harder for lactating fur seals to feed their young. Here's how it works. Mother seals rely on dense schools of fish to raise their pups.
So what a female lactating fur seal wants to do is, you know, she wants to go out and find a dense aggregation of food right next to where her pups are so she can spend the minimum amount of energy to go find it, sit on top of it and eat to her heart's content, and then swim right back and nurse her pups and repeat that all summer long.
But, Short says, commercial pollock fleets break up those dense schools and the fish disperse. So now the mother seal doesn't have that food resource and she can't fatten up her pups as quickly as she could. That's a problem because the pups swim south in the fall. If they haven't built up enough reserves, those pups likely won't survive their first year. And that, Short says, is why fur seal populations are declining so steeply. And if that continues,
I think it's possible for the fur seal herd to eventually go extinct or become extirpated off the Pribilof Islands.
And that would have huge effects on the Ununga communities in places like the Pribilof Islands, who rely on fur seals for subsistence.
We eat those seals, so it gets scary.
Martin Stepton grew up on St. Paul Island, the most populated of the Pribilofs, but now he lives in Juneau, where he advocates for Alaska Native rights.
If you're trying to support your family and you're trying to put food in the refrigerator you worry about the future. What about your kids? How much food is there going to be whenever your kids come of age? Are they going to be able to support their families? You know, these are the things you think about whenever you're scared of the fur seal decline, which is, you know, what has sustained us for thousands of years out in the Pribilofs and the Aleutian Islands.
Stepton says there needs to be action to stabilize the fur seal population. The study suggests that to make any real changes, the fishery would probably need to limit pollock catch to around 1 million metric tons in the areas surrounding the Pribilof Islands. That's a significant reduction, says Stephanie Madsen.
It would be devastating to just have a blunt tool. And that's what I think this is a blunt tool.
Madsen is the executive director of the At-Sea Processors Association, which represents a lot of the catchers and processors in the pollock fishery. She says she's worried about a one-size-fits-all solution.
When you're talking about drawing circles around rookeries and preventing fishing from occurring in there, you're making quite a few assumptions about the pollock staying inside that circle, that the fur seals aren't going to go outside the circle. And I think depending on the size of those circles, for the most part, it could be quite damaging to the pollock fishery's ability to harvest their quota.
And she says limiting the fishery's ability to harvest could have ripple effects across the industry. The pollock fishery is the largest in the United States, and it employs about 30,000 people, according to the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration.
Thousands of jobs and tens of thousands of families that depend on that income.
NOAA has not yet responded to the study. In the past, the organization has touted the fishery as a model of sustainability. In on Alaska, I'm Theo Greenlee.
A winter storm is moving across a swath of the interior. National Weather Service meteorologist Jason Ossenmacher says areas south and east of Fairbanks are expected to see the heaviest accumulations.
2 to 3 inches of snow for the Parks Highway, south of Nenana, as you head through the Alaska Range. Much higher amounts for Isabel Pass along the Richardson Highway. That's going to be more like 5 to 9 inches of snow. So for travelers, that's a big concern if you don't have your snow tires on yet. And then the Alaska Highway and Taylor Highway are looking about anywhere from 3 to 6, maybe 7 or 8 inches of snow through about Wednesday morning.
Austin Mocker says the higher snowfall amounts are due to an Arctic cold front that is expected to stall along the eastern Alaska Range and merge with a low-pressure system in the Gulf of Alaska. Norway's ambassador to the United States has been in Alaska recently. Anniken Krutnes, Norway's first female ambassador to the U.S., has been in Anchorage meeting with state leaders to discuss shared interests. As Krutnes told Alaska Public Media's Casey Grove, her country's strong alliance with the United States and its position in the Arctic mean Alaska and Norway have a lot in common.
We've been talking about climate change, which is, of course, a huge issue for all of us. And at the same time, we've also been talking about how we can have a sustainable economy in the Arctic. We want, of course, the Arctic to be sustainable both economically, socially, and environmentally, and we have to be able to do all of that.
In what ways can, I guess, Alaska and Norway cooperate on that?
I think one starting point is, or it's important to remember that climate change happens much quicker in the Arctic than in the rest of the world. But the reason for the climate change are emissions that comes from the rest of the world. So we cannot in the Arctic fix climate change by changing only our behavior. Climate change is a global problem and it has to be fixed globally because the emissions come from the entire world, not only the Arctic. As everyone on this planet, we have to try to make our carbon footprint as little as possible when we have any activity, but that is actually not so different from the Arctic as for the rest of the world.
Are there specific initiatives that Norway would like to see the United States sign on to towards those goals?
Well, we were, of course, pleased to see that the U.S. Again came back to the Paris Agreement. That is hugely important. And the Arctic Council has an initiative to report on the emissions of methane and black carbon. And the U.S. has now committed to report on that. And that is, of course, also very, very important, especially for the Arctic.
In general, as far as diplomatic concerns, have things improved, I guess, with this new presidency from Norway's perspective?
Norway has a very strong relationship with the U.S., and it goes centuries back. And today I met the Norwegian community, and I was actually surprised by how many Norwegians there are here in Alaska. And our relations go way back, and they are very solid. And we cooperate well with any administration that would be in the White House. The core of our relationship is the security policy, and we're both founding members of NATO, and we had an excellent relationship with the U.S., whatever the administration looks like. With this administration, we also have some important cooperation on the climate issue, which is, of course, we're very happy for that, and we also discuss other global issues with the new administration, such as global health problems.
Speaking of security issues and NATO, are there shared concerns between the two countries about Russia's expansion in the Arctic?
Well, we see a military buildup on the Russian side, and of course we have to keep an eye on that. I would say that the Arctic region is still a peaceful and a prosperous and a predictable region, and it is important that we keep it like that. And I think you have three fundamental pillars for keeping it like that. And the first one is respect for international law. The Arctic is governed by international law, especially the law of the sea. And then the second one is international cooperation. And we have that, especially in the Arctic Council. And the third one is that we are able to manage the resources in a sustainable way. And so far, this has worked out well.
This is a completely different question, and so forgive me, but have you been aware of Norwegian dog mushers' success in races like the Iditarod here in Alaska? What do you think about that?
That's a great question. I think we and Alaska have a lot in common. We like the outdoor life. We're tough people. We are able to deal with the cold weather and the dark. And I'm not surprised that the Norwegians win the race.
Unfortunately for the Alaskans, nobody is surprised that they keep winning.
So we could also talk about cross-country skiing or ski jumping, if you would like. We share a lot of the same interests.
I was going to ask you who you thought was a better skiers, the Alaskans or the Norwegians, but I think I know what you would say.
Yeah. No, but I heard you have a lot of slopes here and that you do a lot of cross-country skiing. And I think especially now during the pandemic, when our possibilities to meet indoor have been limited, I think outdoor life is really a relief for many of us to meet outdoor and go hiking together. That's a good opportunity that we have.
That was the Norwegian ambassador to the United States. I've just been handed an update from the Kodiak Emergency Operations Center. 45 new cases of COVID-19 have been reported for the Kodiak Island Borough. Of those, 29 are considered close contacts of previously reported cases. 14 are community spread, and one is travel-related. 160 cases are currently classified as active locally. 3 active cases are currently hospitalized in Kodiak. There's no title for the screenplay yet, but now Hune Lance Twitchell has a fellowship from the Rasmussen Foundation to realize a long-term dream to bring a true story to life about how Native boarding schools systematically tried to kill Indigenous languages. KTOO's Rhonda McBride spoke to Twitchell about this story and why he's decided to tell it in Tlingit.
Twitchell says this dark chapter in history has recently pushed into the mainstream consciousness, but he's heard stories for years from elders like the late Marge Dutson, who once told him,
"They tried everything. They tried to beat it out of me. They tried to scare it out of me. They tried to shame it out of me. But they couldn't get my language away from me."
Dutson told Twitchell that when she spoke Tlingit on her first day of class at the Juneau Bureau of Indian Affairs School, her teacher grabbed her by the hair, lifted her off the ground, and shook her violently. Twitchell says these stories of courage still inspire him today. But when he set out to record them years ago, a linguist encouraged him to get elders to share them in Tlingit, because it would better preserve the details of what they experienced. That's when he decided to tell the story of two boys who ran away from their boarding school in Tlingit.
Torture, abuse of all different kinds was going on in a lot of these places. And then to sort of have that from the perspective of two young people who are birth speakers of Tlingit and who are there as siblings and can communicate with each other and make a decision to get out of that, I think it has a lot of potential power.
The boys use their traditional knowledge to guide them home from Oregon, a story he's heard from several members of the same family, who have since passed, except for Florence Shakely. Shakely's father, Willie Marks, is the boy who ran away from school with his brother. Twitchell says the springboard for the screenplay will be a high-quality film of the elder telling her story in Tlingit. Twitchell will receive $18,000 for his work and share some of it with Shakely. He says it won't be easy to write the script entirely in Tlingit, but the words of Marge Dutson remind him of why it's so important.
And she said, it's impossible for you to feel how much we suffered when people didn't want our language.
Twitchell hopes a screenplay in Tlingit can capture some of that feeling. He says subtitles can be used if the script is ever turned into a movie. In Juneau, I'm Rhonda McBride.
KMXT Local News is underwritten in part by
GCI. GCI has adjusted store hours across the state to keep our customers and employees as safe as possible during this time. The most up-to-date store hours are available on GCI.com.
This is Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. You could be paying three times the norm for Coast Guard vessel documentation. More on a scam after this.
The Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute works to raise the value of our seafood harvest for the benefit of all Alaskans. Learn more at alaskaseafood.org.
Every year, vessel owners must renew documentation with the U.S. Coast Guard as to the boat's name, ownership, tonnage, home port, and other basic criteria. It costs $26 unless you get scammed by a private provider that's charging three times as much. Fishing groups are warning that's the case with an online company called U.S. Vessel Documentation.
You know, it's serious business. If you don't file your Coast Guard papers, they can end your voyage right there.
Fisherman Norm Hughes of Haines received a letter saying he needed to renew his documentation at a website called uscgdocumentation.us and paid $150 for a two-year renewal. Then he learned it was a legal scam. U.S. Vessel Documentation is sending misleading letters to boat owners across the country, says Steve Ramp, formerly with the U.S. Coast Guard in Sitka.
This company is making themselves look very closely to be an official letter from the Coast Guard when they're not. They're not doing anything illegal. They're offering a service to the owners of documented vessels for an agreed-upon price, and they are performing that service.
U.S. Vessel Documentation is not trying to be the Coast Guard, said spokesman Zachary Johnson.
U.S. Vessel Documentation is not the Coast Guard, and it's not trying to be the Coast Guard, and it's regrettable to hear that people find that to be the case.
Johnson says a disclaimer in small print at the bottom of the company website states that it's a private service, and it's also specified in the terms customers agree to when renewing their registration. As for Haines fisherman Norm Hughes, he sent a message to U.S. Vessel Documentation demanding his money back.
I sent him a nasty gram.
Hughes renewed his vessel documents on the real Coast Guard website. Find links at our website, alaskafishradio.com, thanks to the assist from KHNS in Haines. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods in Kodiak. I'm Lainey Welch.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
If you are a renter who's struggling financially due to COVID-19, Alaska Housing Rent Relief may be able to pay your rent and utility bills for up to 3 months, even if they are past due. The deadline to apply is October 1st. To see if someone you know qualifies for federal emergency rental assistance, visit alaskahousingrelief.org or call 1-844-330-8290 toll-free. That's alaskahousingrelief.org.
Hello, this is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game in Kodiak with Kodiak Commercial Salmon Fishery Advisory Announcement number 52, date issued 10 a.m. on September 15th. There will be a 54-hour commercial salmon fishing period from noon Thursday, September 16th, to 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th, in the Inner Karluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District. Closed waters will be as described in regulation. As previously announced, the following areas will open to commercial salmon fishing for 78 hours from noon Wednesday, September 15th, until 6 p.m. Saturday, September 18th. the Outer Iqaluk section of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Humpy Dead Man section of the Alitak District, the East Side Kodiak District, the Northeast Kodiak District, the Southeast Afognak, Raspberry Strait, Southwest Afognak, Northwest Afognak, Shuyak Island, Paul's Bay, Paranosa Bay, Northeast Afognak, and Duck Bay sections of the Afognak District, the Mainland District, and the Anton Larsen, Sheratine Bay, Kajuyak Bay, Terror Bay, Inner Uganic Bay, Spiridon Bay, Zachar Bay, and Uyak Bay sections of the Northwest Kodiak District. The following areas remain open to commercial salmon fishing until further notice: the Sturgeon, Halibut Bay, Outer Karluk sections of the Southwest Kodiak District, the Central and North Cape sections of the Northwest Kodiak District, the Cape Alitak, Alitak Bay, Mosier Bay, and Olga Bay sections of the Alitak District, and the Iziut and Outer Katoy Bay sections of the Afognak District. Until further notice, in that portions of the Northwest and Southwest Kodiak District south of the latitude of Cape Kuliuk, king salmon 28 inches or greater in length may not be retained by purse-seine gear in the commercial fishery and must be returned to the water unharmed. And other closed waters are as shown in the Kodiak Area Salmon Statistical Chart and detailed in commercial salmon fishing regulations. And statistical charts, harvest strategies, and commercial salmon fishing regulations are available at the Kodiak Fish and Game Office. And, of course, the most recent salmon fishery information may be obtained by calling the department's 24-hour record phone at 486-4559. Thank you very much. Good luck fishing. This is the Alaska Department of Fish and Game.
And here's your Island Messenger for Monday. It is the 20th day of September, the year 2021. The sun rose at 7:51 this morning. It will set again at 8:12, and that's going to give us 12 hours and 22 minutes of daylight. A loss of 4 minutes and 56 seconds compared to yesterday. Our record low for this date was 33, set in 1948, and our record high was 71, set in 1965. Currently dipped down to 52 degrees. They were calling for a high of 57. We're still looking for these northwest winds to blow these clouds completely away. They are expected to gust to 30 miles per hour and up to 40 miles per hour tonight. Mostly clear skies tonight with a low around 39. Sunny skies tomorrow with a high of 46. Northwest wind to 30, gusting as high as 35 tomorrow. And mostly clear skies on Tuesday night as well with a low around 38. And those northwest winds are supposed to come down to 15 on Tuesday night. Looking at our local tides, we have a high tide coming up here on the east side at 2:43 this afternoon. That will be an 8.5-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 8:35 p.m. of 0.7 feet. Over on the west side, you'll have a high tide coming up at 3:11 p.m. in Larsen Bay. That's going to be a 14.4-foot tide, followed by a low tide at 9:17 this evening of 0.5 feet. Mariners, you do have a gale warning tonight for the Shelikof Strait. We're looking for north winds becoming northwest 30 this afternoon, seas to 7 feet. And coming up to northwest 40 tonight and seas building to 8 feet. For tomorrow, northwest 30, seas to 7 feet in the Shelikof. From Marmot Island to Sitkanat, Kodiak's east side offshore, gale warning tonight, north 30 right now, seas to 11 feet. Coming around to the northwest to 35 and seas building to 13 feet tonight. And for tomorrow, northwest 30, seas to 13 feet on our east side. Kodiak City Council will be holding a work session on Tuesday, tomorrow at 7:30, and a regular meeting on Thursday at 7:30. Elected officials may be participating via audio, video, teleconferencing. Public members are encouraged to tune in here at KMXT on 100.1 FM. The meeting will also be web-streamed, and the web-streaming link and meeting packets are available online at the City of Kodiak website. If you have any questions at all, contact the city clerk at 486-8636. But again, that's work session Tuesday at 7:30, regular meeting Thursday at 7:30. Senior Citizens of Kodiak is taking extra precautions due to COVID-19 and includes closing the facility for 2 weeks beginning today, September 20th. Congregate meals and Island Cove programs will be closed. Curbside and home-delivered meals will continue. If a senior needs information on Social Security or Medicare, a phone call is required. Staff is ready to assist where needed. If there are any questions about this, call the Senior Center at 486-6181.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.